digging through the book, and I'm really enjoying it. I think it's not that it's anything really new, but I think there's a new way of look. You know, when you look at the same material many, many times, but you change the way you look at it, sometimes that's what the triggering point is for you to have greater awareness and finally adopt it in your life. So I'm going to start five and then go through the first three chapters of The Slight Edge. Now all you have to do is listen to my little dry cough in the background. But anyway, let's talk about The Slight Edge. For some of you, if you're familiar with the book, it's called The Slight Edge. It's written by Jeff Olson. He calls it The Secret to a Successful Life. And it's really a guide to learning habits of thought, habits of action that will allow you to make the best choices that you could ever make in your life and to move forward and keep the perseverance that's necessary for you to achieve what you want to achieve in life. Now, a lot of you have heard that 100 times. You've read 25 books about the same topics. Jeff kind of starts off his book by saying, hey, this isn't the same old, same old, same old. You know, the how-tos, or this, that, how to be successful, what are the most important things, the miracle stories. He says that's everywhere. We can find books and books and books and books. But what he's trying to do is say that this isn't just about, you know, self-help success book packed with lots of things. It's not all in new, better information. It's really designed to help you use the information that's already out there. So it's looking at how do I best utilize the information that's already available. So let's look at what he does in the book. In the intro part of the book, let's kick off and talk about that. It's not even actually in the outline, but I want to talk to you. There's three stories that he kicks off the book with. And they all have tremendous meaning, and they all kind of tie. They're threads that go throughout the entire book. So it's important to understand those three stories. The first story is a story about the water hyacinth. And for those of you who don't understand this plant or know about it, it's a beautiful, delicate-looking little plant, six petal flowers. But the incredible thing about the water hyacinth, very much like our Brassica gentia, everybody familiar with the hyperaccumulation of minerals in Brassica gentia? Well, the water hyacinth has another of its own hyper states, and that is it's one of the most productive plants on Earth. Its reproductive rate astonishes botanists and ecologists. If you took some water hyacinths and you put it on a pond surface, and if the pond is fairly still and undisturbed, the water hyacinth may end up covering the entire pond in 30 days or less. So think about that. This water hyacinth just keeps spawning itself until it spreads out over the entire pond. Incredible story about this little plant and how it impacts so much of its environment. And how does he take that story and keep it as a thread throughout the whole book? Well, what are you replicating and reproducing in your life and spreading out across your environment? It's a great thing to start looking at. Are you spreading across your environment goodwill and love and contribution and giving? And are you sowing great seeds out there? Are you creating better lives for people? Are you impacting people in a positive way? Is that your water hyacinth? Or is yours a negative? You know, everything's bad, cynical. You know, what is it that you are doing in your life? So it's a way to look at being the water hyacinth in your environment and how are you, because no matter whether you're doing good, doing bad, being positive, being negative, whatever it is, trust me, we're all water hyacinth. We're all covering a pond out there with whatever we're doing. So great story, great idea, great concept to start looking at how we're impacting the world around us, because all of us are water hyacinth. The second story that he talks about in the intro is a story about two frogs. And he just talked about these two frogs that they were left the safety of their swamp and ventured to a nearby farm, and they both were hopping and jumping around, having lots of fun, like frogs are, and frogs can act, and they ended up jumping into a milk pail that was full of cream. And at first, of course, they all were ecstatic because they'd never tasted anything so delicious, so they kept drinking all this great milk, and they were giggling and laughing, and they were just having a heyday, burping. And finally, they got tired, and they got full, and they were fat little tummies, and these two little frogs said, okay, we're done eating. Let's get out of this pail. But what happened is what? They had no trouble hopping in the pail, but how could they get out? The sides of the pail were too slippery, and they couldn't get their gripping on their feet. And it was an incredible, awful reality that was starting to dawn in on them, that they were trapped. They began to thrash around, and finally, one frog looked at the other and said, "It's no use, we're doomed. Let us save what dignity we have left." This is so cute. "And die here like frogs with our eyes facing our homeland," which means put our head down in the milk and face downward, like the bottom of the swamp. Well, the first frog who cried out and said to the other frog, he said, or the first frog that cried that out, the other frog said, "No, no, no, we should never, ever give up. When we were tadpoles, which of us would ever have dreamed that someday we would emerge from the water and hop about on land?" He started looking down. He says, "My goodness, look at what has created in our life. We don't know what it's going to result in, but never, ever, ever give up. Let's swim on and pray for a miracle." But the second frog looked at his other and sadly said, "There are no miracles in the life of a frog. Farewell." And so saying that, he put his head down in the milk and he died. Now the other frog was determined. He was not going to give up. He had no way. He couldn't see his way out of this milk pail. But he kept swimming and swimming and swimming and swimming and swimming in futile circles and hoping against hope for a miracle. And finally, fired by adrenaline, he paddled mightily and finally he just got so worn out and so tired out, and he was just weakening in his muscles, and he could swim no more. And with a great cry of anguish, he stopped paddling and let go, ready to face his fate like a frog. But then something really odd happened. Or would I say it didn't happen? He didn't think. He just sat exactly where he was, and he stretched out his foot, and he touched something solid. For what he had done, he had swum and swum and swum and swum so much that he had churned butter out of the milk. And he had created the butter underneath him to allow him to leap out of the milk pail. So a great story about what? How does that apply to our life? That every day in our life, we have a choice. We can quit. We can give up. We can look back. We can choose life and death. And maybe the choice we make isn't life and death per se, as it was for this frog, but we make choices every day. Whether we stay the course, or we get off, or we change, and we decide to make better choices, and we go forward, and we look forward to what's going to happen, or we wallow in our misery. It's choices. It's just choices we make every day. Life or death. Are we giving up, or do we believe in miracles? Do we believe anything is possible? So that's the story of the two frogs. And the final story that he gave in his book was the wealthy man was nearing the end of his days, and he summoned his two sons to his bedside before he died. He was imminently going to die, and he wanted to pass on to them the opportunity to experience the richness of his life. Now, he was a very, very wealthy man. And he told them first he would give them both the world if he could, but he doesn't own the world, so he couldn't do that. So he says there are three treasures that he's had the good fortune to experience in his life, and he wanted to give these three treasures to his sons. The first gift was easy to give and never runs out. And he made them guess what that was. "I've been giving it to you both since you were born. It's easy to give and never runs out." And the boys figured that out. Well, that's love. And he goes, "Right. I will give you the first gift is a continuous gift of love. It's easy to give and never runs out. The second gift is easy to give, but not always easy to have. For some, it never runs out, while for others, it constantly runs out." And that, the boys looked at that riddle, and he figured out, well, that must be money. And he goes, "Right. Easy to give, but not always easy to have. For some, it never runs out. For others, it constantly runs out." And the third gift is impossible to give, but only can be gained. He has been showing it to them their entire lives, but cannot say whether or not you've gained it. But he's going to give them one last opportunity to see it one last time before he dies. Okay, and the boys were trying to figure out what that one was. Well, here's the riddle that he gave them on the third one. He said, "I will give you a choice. You can either have this stack of 1,000 crisp new $1,000 bills, it adds up to $1 million cash, Or you can have what's in my other hand, which is a shiny new copper penny. If you take the million in cash, you may take it with you or leave it in your purse for safekeeping, whatever you want to do. And your purse will be held by my treasury director. If you take the penny, you may also take it with you or leave it in your purse. However, if you choose the penny, my treasury director has instructions to double the contents of your purse every day. Now, one of his boys jumped on that, hired 16 financial advisors, went off to the took his $1 million, and went off to the races. The other boy went to think about it, and he chose the penny. And the boy who had chosen the $1 million, of course, ran into some misfortune in his first 30 days, and although he made the money, his fees for all his financial advisors ended up being more than he made, so he started actually losing some money. His other brother, he went to see how he was doing, and after a week or so, he found out his brother had $655. On day 28, his brother's purse of pennies had passed the $1 million mark. On day 29, the $2.5 million mark, and on day 30, his brother's purse that started with one penny had more than $5 million. So the remarkable story here is that we all have a choice. The choice was whether or not to take the third gift, and the third gift that his father had was the gift of wisdom. It is something that you cannot give, but it's something that you can gain. And the whole concept, of course, between choosing the penny or choosing the million, is do we look at self-gratification today, or are we looking at what something can build us for the future? And the lessons we learn about that. The power of compounding interest is really what he talks about. So, three great stories that kind of set the thread and the fabric of what he weaves throughout the rest of the book. But let's jump in. So those, just remember those and highlight those three stories. I think when I read them, I just loved all three of them. They have a lot of impact on what we say and what we do in our lives and how we're, you know, what legacy we leave in our lives, too. So let's jump in and look at the three. I'm going to just start off with the first three chapters, and then I'll let you guys decide if you want to go through the rest of the book. I think the three chapters lay the foundation for the rest of the book, and I don't want to take it too far because some of you want to create this yourself. But if you've read the book, hopefully the insight you get, maybe I can give you a little added insight. If you haven't read the book yet, maybe you want to consider getting it or at least learning about it from the Monday call. But it's about the slight edge. And chapter one talks about what is the slight edge. What is the slight edge? I mean, what's the whole book all about? And he first gets into, you know, if how-tos were enough, you know, it talks about they're not enough. And some of you are familiar with Brian Klemmer's book, If How-Tos Were Enough, We'd All Be Skinny, Rich, and Happy. I've talked about the book numerous times. And really what he's saying is information, all how-tos are is information. And information might work for you, it may not work for me. So it works differently for different people, but it's clearly not enough. Otherwise, we would all be truly skinny, rich, and happy. But you need to change the way you think. So if you don't change the way you think, then merely by receiving information, the minute you get your information, you're going to apply it against what your pre-existing thinking is, your belief patterns, your subconscious, your programs, and you're going to change what information you receive. So the secret ingredient in terms of how Jeff Olson looks at it is your philosophy, the need to change the way you think. Is it attitude? He says absolutely not, because emotions change all the time. Take, for example, you say you want to lose weight. A lot of you have said that as of January 1. It was a New Year's resolution. The how-to tells you what? Maybe one of your how-tos on losing weight was you have to work out every day. So you start off with this great attitude, and you go, yeah, first day, boom, and you get pain and aches, and second day you make it, third day, fourth day. Finally, your fifth day, you have a miserable day or something bad happened in your life. So your attitude changed. What happened? Oops, there it goes. You could rationalize why not to go work out because you had a different attitude. So it's not the attitude that makes the difference. I know people love to say attitude is everything, but it's the philosophy behind your attitude that can help create a better attitude, and that's the issue. What are our thoughts? What are our belief systems? What is our foundation behind our attitudes? So what's meant by philosophy, when you're looking at Jeff's approach in this book, he says the law of nature, he takes Ralph Waldo Emerson, the law of nature is do the thing and you shall have the power, but they who do not the thing have not the power. Two prevalent attitudes exist in our society. What have you done for me lately? And the other one is, what can I do to help you? What attitude reflects Emerson? Well, it's pretty obvious. It's the attitude of, what can I do to help you? Do the thing, and you shall have the power. So your philosophy determines your attitude, which determines your actions, which determines your results. And your results create your life. So another example of philosophy would be, as he puts in his book, the formula for success is quite simple. Double your rate of failure. That was written by Thomas J. Watson, who was the founder of IBM. Now, some of you are so afraid of failure that you never take action. And that's the person that decides that he wants a formula of failure. Failure to take action is failure, inherent failure. The formula for success is quite simple. Double your rate of failure. If you examine the lives of some incredible people in our history, Abraham Lincoln failed a zillion times. Babe Ruth, everybody says, oh, he is the greatest home run hitter of all times. But he was also the greatest strikeout hitter misser, you know, hit. He was the greatest number of strikeouts of all time. So talk about failure, there's failure. One of the comments that Jeff makes in his book, successful people fail their way to the top. So those are just some concepts around, it's our philosophy behind how we approach life, not our attitudes, not our how-tos that make all the difference in our lives. Chapter 2 is about the secret of easy things, because he looked at the difference between successful and unsuccessful people. And, of course, you can look at this at Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and you can see all the thoughts and ideas that Napoleon came up with after 30 years of research. Successful people do the easy things. They build their lives around the simple disciplines that contribute to their lives daily. Huge. Successful people do the easy things. It's called the secret of the easy thing. They build their lives around the simple disciplines that contribute to their lives daily. Why don't we take the simple actions? Because, as Jim Rohn would say it, it's easy to do, but it's also easy not to do. If we don't do them, they are so small that they don't, quote-unquote, kill us. They don't have a huge impact. If I don't choose to work out this morning at 6 o'clock, it's not going to have a huge impact on my life. But it's the habit of working out every single day that's going to create the reality of what I want in my life, which is I want greater lean tissue than fat tissue, because I know that makes all the difference in the world on aging, all the difference in the world on my health. It plays a gigantic role, and once you acknowledge the truth of that fact, then it's up to you to build the habits around it to make it your reality. And whether I work out this morning or I don't isn't going to impact it one iota, but what it is impacting is whether I have a habit in my life to do what's right to achieve the result I know that it will result in. But it's easy to do, easy not to. Is working out easy? Is it simple? Absolutely. Any one of us could look at working out for 30 minutes a day as something easy. So why don't we do it? Easy to do, easy not to do. So small that if we don't do it, it won't kill us. The slight edge, this concept of taking the easy action, having the disciplines in our life, the slight edge is always working. It's either working for us or against us. Every moment, every hour, every step we make, every choice we make. You're either playing the game, you're either in the game and allowing that slight edge to work for you, or the slight edge is working against you. So you're either on that upward trend, growing, green and growing, or you're what? You're dying. You're on a downward trend. You're deteriorating. You're going the opposite direction. So it's your choice. You choose every day whether you're going to have a slight edge work for your benefit or to watch a slight edge work for your detriment. But it's always working. And the incredible nature of the easy things is that they produce invisible results, and that's why we tend not to do it. So let's take, for instance, if you're reading, if you know for a fact that reading 10 pages of a good book every day could create unlimited wealth for you, would you do it? People would say, oh, absolutely, Mary Jo, if I knew that it's reading 10 pages of a good book. And I'm going to tell you, reading 10 pages of a good book will make a total difference in your life. So so everybody goes, okay, great, I'm going to start reading 10 pages of a good book every day. You start reading it. You make it through the first 5 days, 10 days, 20 days, maybe the first month, second month, and all of a sudden you slowly stop. And why? Because the result's not visible to you. You're not seeing more money in your bank account. I've done it for 3 months, Mary Jo, and it's not making a difference. And I can look at you and say, I've done it for 35 years, so what's the... It's not about seeing visible action. It's about invisible results that you create by doing the things you know are right. Easy to do? Mm-hmm. Reading 10 pages of a good book every day? Mm-hmm. Easy not to do? You betcha. It's the secret of the easy things. Like saving money. Easy to save a few bucks here and there. Make a commitment each month of the year. You're going to put away $200 by the end of the year. You have your IRA set up. Easy to do? Uh-huh. Easy not to do? You bet. Do you have reasons why? Do you have that little voice rationalizing why not to do it? Yep. What you do in little steps really matters. We all should get this for one main reason. Because you preach it every day of your life in your Manatech business. Every day of your life, you're out there in Manatech and you're telling people to swallow Amber Toast. Would you agree? Absolutely. Why do you tell them to swallow Amber Toast every day? Swallow Amber Toast every day because it's going to cure a disease they have? Absolutely not. You tell them to swallow Amber Toast every day, no matter what they feel like, because the benefits of getting rid of a deficiency, a known deficiency in our diet, will play out the rest of their life. It's something they need to do every day of their life. They may see no noticeable differences, but we preach and teach. You do it every single day. You swallow Amber Toast every day, not for immediate results, but you do it because you know it's the right thing to do. You're resolving a deficiency in your diet, which is going to allow the cells to communicate better, which is going to give you healthier cells, healthier organs, healthier systems, healthier body. It's not about immediate gratification. So, people, if we can see that we do this every day in our Manatech business around Amber Toast for our health, why can't we see this applies as it applies to our relationships, our financial situation, our commitment to educating ourselves, our self-development, all these other areas? Why isn't it that we have to see those as well? And it's not about immediate gratification. It's not about immediate results. It's about we know that we know the long-range impact is going to make a major difference in our life. Easy to do? Easy not to do. Invisible results, so we tend not to do it. Okay, let me open up. I didn't get to chapter 3, but let's go through chapter 1 and 2, see if we got any responses. I'm going to, because we only have a few minutes left. Okay, any comments from the audience?
Yes, keep it up.
You want me to finish the book?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, it's excellent.
Does it make sense to you guys starting to get this?
Yes.
What is the name of the book?
The name of the book is called The Slight Edge. It's written by Jeff.
Where did you get the book, Mary Jo?
Did I what?
Where did you get the book?
Well, Lydia actually picked it up for me at a conference. You can go to Networking Times, and they're selling it.
I thought on there you could only get the CD.
You can only get the CD?
No, you can get both.
You can get both, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Mary Jo, this thing is going to be worth your commentary more than anything else.
Thank you. Then I'll keep going. We got through Chapter 1 and Chapter 2. If you get a chance to get the book in the next week or so, please do it, because I'll finish the book with all of you then. And I phenomenal information in it. I love it, and I'll tell you, I looked at the back of the book where he gave some references of the life-transforming resources. In almost every single book that he's listed, I've read and is in my a library. Isn't that cool? I mean, it just...